Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
Cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
Good morning, Milwaukee. Good morning, Wisconsin. Mondays on The Upswing. All about momentum and moving Milwaukee forward. That's how we theme out Mondays. Albert Siebert. You know the name? The founder of Milwaukee Electric Tool Company. Now, of course, Milwaukee Tool. Siebert, I'll give you a little bit background of Albert Siebert here. He was born October 18th, 1879 in Dayton, Ohio, the son of a Lutheran pastor. After graduation from Wittenberg College, Mr. Siebert pursued a sales career with National Cash Register Company, NCR, in Dayton. Then after about 19 years, he left NCR to accept a position as a sales manager at A.H. Peterson Manufacturing Company, right here in beautiful Milwaukee, selling their new engineered, lightweight electrical hand drill. And you guessed it, you can probably tell where this story's going. After a fire, that company was forced into bankruptcy, unfortunately. Mr. Siebert bought the remaining assets and started Milwaukee Electric Tool Company in 1924. Fast forward, the Siebert Lutheran Foundation was created in 1976 after Siebert donated $35 million, which was his entire ownership of the company, into a trust. As stated in his last will, he said the funds would be dedicated to spreading the gospel, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, and alleviating human suffering. The foundation's mission really goes beyond what its core mission is each and every day, and it's granted $152 million to local and regional organizations. There's a new matching endowment campaign that was recently announced. And we're going to tell you how it all works and what it means with Derek Tyus, who's the first business leader to dive in and started the endowment fund. Plus, we're going to hear about the rise in needs of the area while learning about the foundation's recent grantees with Sarah Gidde, Director of Philanthropy. Giving, the business of good, moving Milwaukee forward. That's all today on The Upswing. But next, Dave Spano, President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, will join us to set the stage with some smart tips for charitable giving from families. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ.
Money, 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 money. Money, 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 money.
Welcome back to The Upswing, all about charitable giving, philanthropy, and more. Today on the Monday show, Dave Spano, President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management, joins us to set the stage with some smart tips for charitable giving. He's on the Tri-County Contracting Hotline. Dave, happy Monday to you.
Yeah, happy Monday to you as well. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. So one reason we like to spotlight nonprofits on Mondays is because obviously so many people are seeking strategies to build whatever legacy they want to leave and to maximize the positive based upon their personal financial situations. And last week you had a workshop entitled The 8 Tips for Smarter Charitable Giving. I wanted to do a quick recap of that and kind of set the stage for today's show. But other than, of course, the difference that donations make in the lives of others and serving to uplift the community, what do we need to consider, Dave?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's not just about the financial aspect. You know, does it fit into your estate plan? Is it in the right direction of what you're trying to accomplish economically? But as you know, it's way more than that. It's just not about the head. Often it's about the heart issues as well. So you have to look at the charitable organizations that you're looking at and what are the missions and goals of those organizations, and do they align with your missions and goals? So I would really start with that, which is, to me, a more heart issue than a head issue. Are you aligned in for missions and goals? And in once you give them the money, are they making progress? And is there an impact in what they're doing? So I really start with two aspects. What are the economic issues, the head issues, and what are the heart issues, which are missions and goals?
Okay. So how do people know that they're contributing to a qualified charitable organization? What's that kind of first touch point?
Yeah, that's, well, first of all, they should obviously lead with that. And you can go and look at their websites, but the IRS has something on their webpage that talks about if they have a 501c3, for example. And so you can go to their site, make sure you have the charitable organization's EIN or employer identification number, and pluck that in. And it'll come back and make sure that they are a qualified organization. If the IRS gave them this letter of determination, then you'll know that your money's going to the right organization, and it's worth the work to do that.
Okay. And what's accountability and responsibility look like post donation, both on the donor side and the organization side?
Yeah, right. So the organization has to file what's called a 990. It doesn't matter what organization it is, and if you are bored out of your mind, you can go and start pulling people's 990s and see what they're doing with the money, where the money is going. You know, what are the expense ratios that they're using? Some organizations raise a lot of money, but then take a lot of money for running the organization. So take a look at their 990, and that's part of, you know, what are they doing? What's the stewardship and accountability? But there is also some accountability to those who give them the money. And so stay informed. Make sure this organization is headed in the right direction for you personally, and stay informed, ask questions. Do you want a relationship with this organization, Jeff, is really mm-hmm. important. And is it just a one-time donation, or do you want to build a long-lasting relationship? And some people do that.
Okay. You talked about a lot of different strategies last week. What's a qualified charitable distribution, donor-advised funds, and charitable trusts? Can you give us a little bit of background on each one of those three?
Yeah. You know, in the estate planning and in financial planning, there's a lot of acronyms. So you just talked about the QCD. What the heck is that? That is when your money is in your IRA and you get to a point where you have to take some money out, a required minimum distribution. So everybody playing along at home, that's the RMD for the QCD, right? So all of these crazy letters, right? So you have to take money out when you get to a certain age. So you have to take required minimum distribution. There is a really great planning idea. So when you get to that point, and perhaps you don't need that required minimum distribution because you've done some other planning, you have other assets, you have a pension, so on and so forth, you can take that RMD, that required minimum distribution, and send it directly to your charity, be it your school, your church, whatever the organization is that you are aligned with, and send it right to them. And therefore, you don't have to take that RMD, that distribution, as income. So it's for you, it's good as the person who's making that donation, because it doesn't increase your income, and it goes directly to the charity. So we do that as one of our planning concepts. And, you know, it's called a QCD. And then you mm-hmm. heard the other term that you talked about was donor advised funds. And it's like a charity for an organization that runs it, but it runs it for you. You don't have to file your own foundation. You don't have to do the legal work. You don't have to do the tax filings every year. And there's a lot of DAFs, or donor advised funds, that exist today. All the major custodians, you know, the ones that we use, Schwab and Fidelity, for example, they have them set up and ready to go. So if you are going through that process, you can certainly do that. But again, you have to work, Jeff, with a qualified advisor who does these things, who understands that, and make sure that it fits into your plan.
Okay. What's one of the biggest mistakes that families make with their charitable giving? Is it not planning effectively, or is there stuff along the process that is just, whoa, we didn't do this right, or we didn't think of that?
Right. You know, it is. I think you have to do, I mean, I can tell you personally, you know, we have a foundation, so we get a lot of requests. And so sometimes it's difficult to just sprinkle small amounts in all of these organizations. And, you know, there could be a situation where you want to be very myopic about where you're going to give your money. Is it aligned with what you're trying to do? Is it for childcare or education or healthcare? What are these things that you believe in? And so make sure that you're aligned and that you're just not sprinkling just because somebody calls you up or writes you a letter. And that does happen a lot. That's number one. Number two is, of course, make sure that it's, you know, you don't wait until December 30th to make that donation because it's a surprise to the organization, and it may be difficult to do the planning properly as well. So, you know, think about it. Make sure that it's in the right spot, that you're doing the planning throughout the year. It could be lump sum. It could be periodic, whatever it is, but you can think about these ideas. And lastly is make sure that it is in your heart issue. You know, there's people who give, you know, to organizations that shelter dogs or, you know, or children or cancer, whatever it is, make sure that you sit down and it fits in your personal estate plan. This is not planning by the pound. Make sure that you've gone through this process, that it aligns with you, that it fits into your estate plan. And those are really the biggest things that I'd be aware of.
All right. Very good. Dave Spano, President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for joining us, Dave. Smarter charitable giving for families and more. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right. When we come back from the break, we'll continue our Monday momentum with the Siebert Lutheran Foundation, getting into their needs, their strategies. And first, we'll talk to Derek Tyus, the new Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer at Versity, a national leader in innovative blood health solutions. Derek is also a Siebert Lutheran Foundation board member. We will talk about his endowment fund and much, much more. This is the Monday Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. All right. Welcome back to the Monday Upswing, charitable giving and more. With the good people at the Siebert Lutheran Foundation. Just a quick follow-up on what Dave Spano was talking about. And Sarah Gidley, the Director of Philanthropy at Siebert. Sarah, you had a really good point that people shouldn't wait to plan out their charitable giving until they're 70 or 80. Like, it's really kind of a lifelong learning process. And I'm sure that's what you found in your role.
It's true. Thanks, Jeff. I'm sitting here with a very youthful Derek Tyus, who I would say is in the prime of living his life. And maybe one wouldn't think that you would be making those long-term philanthropic decisions, you know, when you're in your 40s or your 50s. But life can happen. I experienced that myself, being widowed very early. And if you think I have all the time in the world to make those philanthropic plans and live out my passions by making a philanthropic donation, I'd say you might want to think earlier rather than later.
Yeah. Okay. And that's probably a good lesson for anything in life, whether it's business or giving or family, you know, be in the now and be in the present and take advantage of what is in front of us. So Derek, you are kind of fresh still into your position at Versity, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate that.
And obviously an active member in the community, serving on boards of several nonprofits, including Siebert, the Children's Wisconsin Foundation, and more. But just give us your career path and kind of the Derek Tyus story in about 30 seconds, if you can do that.
Sure, Jeff. I'm a local kid, born and raised. Attended Marquette University, as
nice.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
Our friendship goes back many years and have been in the Milwaukee area essentially all of my career, with the exception of the time that I spent out of the state to attend business school. Okay. So I've been fortunate to work with private organizations my entire career, starting in public accounting with Arthur Anderson. After that, I spent a year at SC Johnson in a financial role, 18 and a half years at Northwestern Mutual.
Okay.
Life, and then 8 years after that to working with West Bend Insurance. And as you said, now I've landed at Versity.
Okay. So what's kind of walk us through just briefly the business impact and community needs as you see it at Versity right now?
Well, the biggest need that we have at Versity, as you mentioned, we're blood health innovators. As right now, during the summer season, as school's out and families are beginning vacations, is that, you know, blood collection is what we do. And given all the activities and the wonderful outdoor time that people spend here in the Midwest, and particularly in Milwaukee, they don't often think of blood donations. And this is a challenging time for us. Our collections tend to dip significantly. And right now, our biggest challenge is just reminding individuals that the life-saving donations that they give don't stop just because it's summertime. So for your listeners who are out there, if they can remember to stop by the local blood centers and give a donation, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, and it's like anything I find with blood donation, I have to schedule it. Because if I don't schedule it, it doesn't happen. I think that's paramount. You know, put it on your schedule and make sure it's something you do regularly.
We're more than happy to help you with that.
All right.
If you visit our website, you can sign up. And once you become a donor, we will remind you to regularly contribute.
Okay.
Because, as I said, the life-saving impact continues year-round.
Yes. So why did you start the endowment fund at Seabird? Kind of walk us through that. And you told us a little bit about your personal story, but first-generation college graduate. And, you know, what's your commitment there in terms of education and starting the endowment fund?
You know, Jeff, I was fortunate to have two very wonderful parents who emphasized faith, who emphasized education, and always, you know, making sure to share the gifts that God had given to me in service with and for others. And, you know, being a board member at Seabird, when the concept of Seabird Serves was developed, I could think of no better way to not only, you know, my parents, but also to give and know that I'm doing something that's aligned with my faith, my values, my belief, and what was instilled in me. And I know that the legacy of the endowment will have the impact that I desire, something that Dave Sponnell mentioned during his talk about making sure that your gift is aligned with your values, your heart, and the impact that you want to have.
So now taking it to the next level, it's the responsibility to get more area business leaders to create endowment funds as well, correct?
Well, I don't know if it's the responsibility, but I hope that
the privilege.
I hope that the example and the privilege, you're right, is to encourage those who have been blessed or who have been fortunate to share some of their gifts, some of their wealth, to uplift you know, the entire Milwaukee community.
Okay.
Because philanthropy, as I'm sure Sarah will tell you, philanthropy is so important, and Milwaukee is a community that has benefited in so many wonderful ways by the generosity of many individuals.
Yeah. When we come back from the break, current funding priorities for the foundation. Welcome back to The Upswing. With the launch of individual endowment campaigns from leaders like Derek Tyus, who joins us today, we're diving into moving Milwaukee forward with the Seabird Lutheran Foundation today. Seabird's Director of Philanthropy, Sarah Gilday, joins us as well. Sarah, what are some of the current funding priorities of the organization, and what are the specific areas of focus?
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. Well, our funding is in three categories. We break that down into growing, educating, and serving. Growing the body of Christ, funding's primarily for churches, educating, which can be anywhere from pre-K all the way up through post-secondary education at Lutheran educational institutions, and then serving, which would be wide-ranging from prison ministry to food insecurity to housing to drug and alcohol rehabilitation. So,
and is there a specific neighborhood focus or a regional focus that you seek giving in?
Well, for the growing category, we fund statewide, but for educating and serving, that's just primarily to the Milwaukee area, maybe the four county metro Milwaukee area, sometimes in Kenosha and Racine. We are based on 27th and Wells, though, and we weren't always in this location, but it is exactly where we want to be right now in the near West Side neighborhood. We want to be close to our grantee partners, and we want to be a resource to them in the neighborhood through collaboration as well as letting them use our space whenever they need.
Yeah. Okay, great. And when did you make that move?
That was probably about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, a lot happening just west of Marquette University, for sure. A lot of new development and a lot of need as well. So,
another priority is something that we're pretty excited about is we are exploring ways to bring people back into a church community. And some may have gotten busy and kind of not prioritized being able to make it to church. But if you've, you know, kind of read the statistics, it's you know, two decades ago, an average of 42% of U.S. adults attended religious services. A decade ago, the figure fell to 38%, and it's currently just 30%. Yeah. And we are seeing that need greatly from the churches that we support. And so we are exploring ways to bring people back into a church community by not necessarily entering through the church walls, but having a sense of community and gathering outside of that those church walls.
I mean, community building of any type helps raise the raise neighborhood yeah. development and kind of gives everyone more and more opportunity. So mm-hmm. that's a good thing for sure. So in terms of the growth of the foundation and the matching endowment campaign, explain that to us a little bit more in terms of how the matching funds work and what it all means.
Well, you kicked us off beautifully with the story of Mr. Albert Siebert, which I have gotten so many times. People are just so inspired by his story, right? So you kind of told the story so well. But it was really he wanted to save the jobs of his workers at that time. And he prayed to say, please, let me just turn this company around and save those jobs. And if you do, I'm committed that I'll pledge a portion of the company profits. And he gave it all. And I think that's really the best story of him taking that initial 35 million, and now we have granted more than 152 million. We have quadrupled that initial investment of his. And I think that story speaks volume and has kind of been a testimony to maybe why Derek got involved and four others have already committed to a named endowment before we even went public with it a couple of weeks ago. And I think it's his story is so inspiring, and that's why we started the match opportunity, is to see if we could inspire others to do what he did, which has had just such an enormous impact these past 70 years.
And Derek, you know, some people may not like endowments because they'd rather give throughout the course of their lifetime. I mean, how do you have those discussions with people you're trying to bring on board?
Well, quite honestly, I think, piggybacking on what Sarah said about the growth of the impact. Remember, this foundation started with less than 40 million of assets. We currently are stewards and responsible for over 100 million of assets, and those assets are used to continually meet the impact in the areas and provide support in alignment with our Lutheran values. I would say that people who are reticent about endowments should understand. They have to do their homework. I mean, going back to the earlier conversation, understand the organization that you're looking to work with, but understand that once you're comfortable with that organization and their stewardship and responsibility of your gift, that it can have a legacy. It can have impact for numerous years, even beyond your lifetime. So I would encourage individuals to really think about it, and whether it be with the Siebert Foundation or the Donor Advised Fund.
Yeah. When we come back from the break, the Giving Pledge is a charitable campaign founded by Bill Gates and Warren Buffett that encourages wealthy people to contribute a majority of their wealth to philanthropy. And that happened in June 2022. The pledge had over 236 signatures from 28 countries. I want to get Sarah and Derek's take on, could this work on a local and statewide level? This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing Monday Momentum with the Siebert Lutheran Foundation and more. Last week, the Greater Milwaukee Foundation named Greg Wesley as the organization's next president and chief executive officer. Wesley succeeds Ellen Gilligan, who has announced her retirement plans after more than a decade of leadership at the GMF. Derek Tyus is a board member at the GMF. How do all the foundations work in concert together, and specifically work with the Greater Milwaukee Foundation?
You know, Jeff, that's a great question. I'm not sure that there is an intentionality of working together, but we all address a lot of similar issues, and we all tend to have a focus of bettering the community and making things greater for all of us.
Yeah.
So I would say that I have seen that there's been more collaboration amongst organizations of late. Specifically with Siebert Lutheran, there hasn't been any significant outreach that I'm aware of, but that's not something that that I don't think either organization would be interested.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Milwaukee has a very vibrant nonprofit sector addressing a various wide variety of social and community needs. What are some of the biggest needs that you see right now, Sarah?
Well, I think when we talk to donors, one of the biggest needs that they are passionate about and they're seeing is we are in a mental health crisis, not just in Milwaukee, but nationwide. There's such a significant gap between what providers are compensated for and then the actual cost of providing that services. There aren't enough individuals going into that field to provide the needed counseling for not only young people, but adults. So we are seeing such a rising need there, as well as the mental health crisis is also affecting our partners that are in education as well. You know, if a kid is struggling with some mental health needs and issues, it's tough to have a good day at school and be thriving. And even for adults to be thriving, contributing members of society if they are struggling with some underlying issues. So that I think is one of the biggest. Derek?
And I would just add on to that, Jeff, our lay leaders, our pastors are also, because of all of the burdens and stresses of their congregants, they too are dealing with things. So we have seen a lot of recent asks for support, and we've been directing resources towards addressing this issue.
Opening up that space, no matter where your leadership path is, it's good for everyone, for sure. I had mentioned before the break the giving pledge on a global scale that has 28 countries and almost 250 individuals involved. Could you see something like that on a Milwaukee and Wisconsin level working, where business leaders say, hey, this is my pledge, this is my commitment to give everything I have back to the community?
I think that philanthropy is deeply personal, and I would love to see that happen on a local level. Not sure how we can make that work, but hopefully the examples of others and leaders who have so generously given of their treasures would spur something like that on a local level. Sarah, I don't know your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree, Derek. It is a personal choice, and being in this field of fundraising for over 20 years is really, you know, a gift to be able to hear people's personal, like your own reason of why you established an endowment. And people come to that decision based on, you know, more than what's in their, I'd say more what's in their heart than their head. And it is a personal choice. You know, looking at the statistics, though, individuals make up the biggest share of giving, 64% nationwide, $319 billion. You know, we wouldn't have this thriving world-class city that we have in Milwaukee if we didn't have people who stepped up, you know, 100 years ago to you know, make an investment in this city. And so I would say, however people come to that decision, it is their own personal choice. But looking at what the greater good could be from making that investment, the gift you make after your death is the biggest gift you'll ever be able to make. And so spend some time thoughtfully considering what you want that legacy to be, and the work you're passionate about today, and how you want that to continue into the future.
Very good. When we come back from the break, we will get some examples of that work that's being done by Siebert in the community, some of their grantee partners, and we will wrap it up with the future of giving in Greater Milwaukee. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Derek Tyus and Sarah Gilday from Siebert Lutheran Foundation join us today. Sarah, what are some of the examples of grant recipients and the impact the foundation has had, specifically kind of I know there's you made a big investment at the rebuilding of the Redeemer Lutheran Church on 19th in Wisconsin, correct?
That's true. And it's hard to just lift up a few, because with over 100 grantees annually, it's like choosing your favorite child. But yeah. I will just focus on three of our favorite children today. Redeemer is one of those. And they're hard at work on the Love Your Neighbor phase of their renovation. And so this portion of the project, it's entirely devoted to its community services to support mental health, recovery, and nutrition on the Near West Side. And we are pleased to have been an early investor in that project. They have a $500,000 match that ends on August 31st. So every dollar will be matched up to $500,000 until the end of August.
Okay. And there's a completely renovated event space there, new kitchens to share hot meals each week. So a complete rebuild at that historic church. It's pretty beautiful.
It's going to be such a gem for that neighborhood. I can't wait to see it come to fruition. Pastor Lisa's just amazing.
What are some of the, a couple of the other causes?
Well, a couple others that come to mind. A couple of weeks ago, I was doing a fellowship dinner at Serenity Inns, where you bring dinner and join in fellowship and dinner with those that are residents at Serenity Inn, recovering from addiction recovery. And wow, their building is sure taking shape across the street. They are expanding to be able to house even more men in their journey on the path to recovery.
Okay.
And then what also comes to mind is I had one of the greatest days of my whole year. On Thursday, I got to go visit Fox Lake Correctional, and I got to see 8 graduates graduate with a degree in biblical studies and psychology from Trinity University as part of the Wisconsin Inmate Education Association. And so these men will go on. Many have long sentences within the prison system, and they will go on to minister and to counsel others that have long sentences within the prison system. They are really replicating themselves in being able to meet that need of having someone within one of the toughest environments. That they'll be that person in the darkness for someone to talk to. And we also fund that program.
All right. Derek, what's the future hold, not only for the endowment funds and campaigns, but for the foundation and philanthropy efforts as a whole in the city of Milwaukee? That's a big question.
It's a very big question, Jeff, but, you know, I'll simply say more. You know, the need is great, and we have shown at Siebert and through our work at the Greater Milwaukee Foundation that the impact of philanthropy is significant in changing communities' lives and individuals, and the hope is that as individuals think about their next and what they'd like to do with their resources, that they really consider philanthropy and the impact that it can have on this wonderful community.
Very good. All right. I appreciate you both spending time with us this beautiful Monday. Have a wonderful week.